This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Justice Department policy is sitting presidents cannot be prosecuted for anything. Special Prosecutor Jack Smith on Monday moved to dismiss both the January 6th and classified documents cases against President-elect Trump.
The judge granted Jack Smith's request to dismiss the January 6th case, but she did so without prejudice, which means theoretically the case could be brought back after Donald Trump is no longer president. But that is highly unlikely to happen.
ABC's Jonathan Carl. Mr. Trump took to his social media to announce that after being inaugurated January 20th, his first order of business will be to impose via executive order tariffs of 25% on all goods imported from China and Mexico. As of today, the right to an abortion up to 24 weeks is in Arizona's constitution, but it will take another court ruling to undo the current 15 weeks ban and more than 40 other regulations. This is ABC News. Just in time for Thanksgiving week travel, some airport service workers didn't show up at Charlotte Douglas International Airport.
Most of those workers did show up for work today. These are janitorial staff, people who push wheelchairs at the Charlotte Airport, and they are demanding higher wages. And today, some of them decided to walk off the job in protest. But I've just checked in with the airport and the airlines, and things are looking pretty smooth at the Charlotte Airport.
ABC's Sam Sweeney. A New York City holdover from the pandemic is on the way out.
For thousands of New York City restaurants, they were a lifeline.
For the revenue for the restaurants and for just like more seating.
For some of the millions of New Yorkers who live in the city, they've become kind of a pain.
I think they probably create some hazard and they do take up a lot of parking spaces.
The dining shed set up because customers were afraid to eat inside during the pandemic must be removed by Friday, the city says. They can be put back up again in the spring, but with a lot more rules in place.
ABC Sherry Preston. I'm Richard Cantu, ABC News.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Zomers, are you a Netflix and chill guy?
Do you know what Netflix and chill means?
I thought it just meant watch something on Netflix together.
You say that's what you're going to do, but you're really having them over there for sex.
This is why nobody wants to come to my place anymore. I say, hey, you want to come over and have Netflix and chill? People keep saying, well, no, I don't think so. I'll take it back. And I just thought they were being rude.
I do have Netflix, though.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Packers get some revenge. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After losing in the playoffs three times to the 49ers under Matt LaFleur, the Packers beat them at Lambeau Field by a final score of 38-10 yesterday. Was it revenge? Packers quarterback Jordan Love.
It's huge. I mean, we talked about it all week. I mean, just the fact that they knocked us out, and the last time we played them, we lost. So we knew it was going to be a four-quarter fight. It feels good to be able to go out there and have a win like this. So, we're going to move past it now. But definitely feels good.
49ers tight end George Kittle.
It felt like they were on the field the entire first and part of the second quarter, so time possession was tough. I feel like that's something that I try to emphasize every single week. Like, hey, what are your goals of victory? Hold on to the ball, run the ball a ton, don't turn the ball over, and I don't think we did any of those three things tonight.
NBA, the Bucks are traveling to Florida. They play the Miami Heat tomorrow night. Tip-off time 6:30. The Bucks beat the Hornets in Milwaukee Saturday night, 125-119. The Bucks are 8-9 and have now won 4 in a row. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Oftentimes after an election, regardless of which party won, people say they are leaving America. It's usually an emotional knee-jerk reaction, but Ellen DeGeneres is actually leaving. The talk show host says she is not only headed to the UK due to the election results a couple weeks ago, but she is also quitting show business. No one is happier to hear this than those who work for her. Lady Gaga's new song, Die With a Smile, is the fastest ever to reach 1 billion streams on Spotify. The song, which was a collaboration with Bruno Mars, has also picked up 2 Grammy nominations, all this on the heels of the announcement that Gaga will headline at next year's Coachella Festival. That ought to help her get that horrible Joker 2 taste out of her mouth. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Clearing tonight, a low of 22, sunny 33 for tomorrow. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, a low of 24. Wednesday, probably the nicest day of the week, partly sunny, highs near 38. 31 with snow for Thanksgiving. For Friday, partly sunny, 24.
It's 34 at our studios.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, political editor Dan Schaaf. We discuss how Democrats discuss race and racial justice. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand
up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut. He didn't cut deep.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake. And I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chuzhunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. And we hold these monthly conversations in partnership with the city to stay up to date on all things relating to our urban Native community.
That's right. Minneapolis Air host Christine McDonald's is the city's American Indian Community Specialist. Thank you, Christine. Always great to hear from you. Take it away.
Thank you, Robert. I'm so happy to be here. Buju, Ogadaki, Gabuig, Nindijnikas, Ajijek, Nindundem. I am Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And today we're starting off with our guest, Patrick Hamlin from the Minneapolis Health Department. Deputy Commissioner Hanlon will be speaking about the Climate Legacy Initiative, its areas of focus, and the climate work being done in the Green Zone neighborhoods. Welcome, Deputy Commissioner Hanlon. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? Thank you for having me on, Christine, Haley, and Robert, and taking the time to put this together.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at the City of Minneapolis?
Sure. I'm the Deputy Commissioner in the Health Department. I oversee our sustainability, healthy homes, and climate change work, our environmental work in the City of Minneapolis. I've been here for about 18 years. Started out doing a lot of historical, kind of traditional regulatory work, and have moved into opening up more and more programs that are available for community resources, grants for communities, and really being able to empower community groups that are doing work and individuals that are doing work in the community that support our environment. I oversee the big piece that I oversee right now with my team. I struggle in just talking about me. I really represent an entire team of people that are doing this work. But we're implementing our climate equity plan, which is a science-based greenhouse gas emissions, hitting science-based greenhouse gas emission targets. And as the name implies, climate equity plan, it centers equity. So we try to get the majority of our funding out to environmental justice communities and addressing equity issues.
What is the city's climate legacy initiative?
Yeah, so the city's climate legacy initiative, it's really the first step in order to hit that climate, those climate equity plan goals, those big ambitious targets. You need to take that first step forward. And so the Climate Legacy Initiative is the city's first step forward, pretty ambitious step forward. It's a $10 million a year investment in climate change, and it's greatly reducing our emissions by 2030 and becoming carbon neutral by 2050. And so it's a plan that supports our, or it's a first step of our climate equity plan. Again, focused in equity, all of, at least 60% of the funding, that's the target that we try to hit, is centered on equity and getting those resources out to the community.
What kind of projects does the Climate Legacy Initiative include?
Yeah, so if I were to put it into big buckets, I would say it's addressing workforce. If we look at how much work really needs to be done in Minneapolis in terms of planting trees, in terms of energy efficiency and buildings and everything, we really need the workforce to be able to make that happen. And so it's green career exposure, working with youth and young adults and being able to get exposure to green careers. Then the other bucket I would say is in energy efficiency, is getting money to people, to residents, to small businesses, to be able to invest in energy efficiency, planting more trees. We can't really plant enough trees, like to plant as many as we possibly can. Investing in urban gardening and farming initiatives. There's a big intersection between the growing of food and food production and our use of food and climate change. And then also electric vehicles. So electrifying our buildings in terms of the energy systems, and then also electrifying our vehicles and the way that we get around, because it's a cleaner, cleaner source of energy.
Mm-hmm. And how will the Climate Legacy Initiative support the needs of the Native American community in Minneapolis?
Yeah, so we have a number of direct work that we're doing with a lot of folks in the Native, from different areas in the Native American community. Little Earth, we've done gardening projects. The American Indian Center, they're one of our main resilience hubs, centers here in Minneapolis. And then we have a carbon sequestration technology, which is actually will be first in the country coming up this spring. And that's in partnership with the Shakopee, Mattawakan, and Sioux. And we're really grateful for the partnership that we've had with them to get that work off the ground. A lot of our folks in the Native American community in Minneapolis are in what are called our green zones. Those mm-hmm. are areas that have burdens. If you overlap air quality burdens, maybe racial disparities, income disparities, they show up in our community in these two areas called green zones. So we invest more money in those areas. We invest intentionally in those areas. We have relationships in those areas that we really invest most of our money. We go to those areas first. And a lot of folks mm-hmm. in Minneapolis who are from Native communities live in those, in that, especially that south side green zones.
Right.
And then, of course, we have partners like Sabathany and Little Earth that are also in American Indian Center that are in those south side green zones or directly near them.
Mm-hmm. Can you just repeat what the initiative was that you're doing with Shakopee?
Shakopee, Mattawakan, and Sioux it's a biochar program. It's actually a technology that was used.
Is it the soil thing?
Yeah, it's called terracotta. It's used in South America. It was actually kind of rediscovered, and it's using an indigenous technology, and you're heating up wood waste to 700 degrees Celsius. And then you're breaking that up and you mix it with the soil. So we use the compost that they have at the Mattawakan and Sioux community facility, the compost facility. Mm-hmm. We mix the biochar. So we'll be producing biochar here. We'll be mixing it with their compost from the Mattawakan and Sioux community and then getting it out to gardening groups. And that sequesters carbon for over 1,000 years.
Yeah, I think we've had a couple of our urban farms, our urban gardens use that char soil already, if I'm correct. Like there's a medicine garden over by Indian Health Board.
I remember being
the focus of that. That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
That's great stuff. What type of work is being done in the Southside Green Zone?
So I'd say our most direct work that we're doing in the Southside Green Zone is with our Green Cost Share program. So we have energy rebates for folks that live in the Green Zones, single families up to 4-unit properties. Any property we have a program, but the really big one that we have is working with residential properties. It's up to $14,000 per property. So for a single family house or a duplex or triplex or quad, that we will match investment. And then we work with a group called Center for Energy and Environment. and they have financing on the backside of it. So I should say on the front end, we also pay for home energy squad visits. So people can come in, they can make an assessment of where people can save money in their homes. We offer a $14,000 rebate, and that's on top of the utility rebates, you know, any other incentives that people can get in their properties. And then there's financing on the back end. And I should say that we have incentive programs for people that are, if you're living in a rental situation, you know, this is a great tool to bring forward to your property owner and say, you know, we want a more comfortable home, a more energy efficient home. So to bring these resources to the home. So I'd say that's the biggest incentive that we have.
Can you tell me how somebody would find out if they live in the green zone to be able to participate in that program?
Yeah, if you go to, if you can search a couple things. Our city websites aren't the greatest usually to navigate, but if you go to the Minneapolis Bonus Rebate Program, you can navigate from there. Just search that in your search engine, Google that, Minneapolis Bonus Rebate Program.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you. Are we going to move to a break?
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950, here to tell you about the exterior construction company I trust, Snap Construction. If your home was hit with the most recent storms, trust the most well-reviewed exterior construction company, Snap Construction, for a free home inspection.
This is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. There are a lot of great construction companies in town. My advice is to take your time and do your research. Make sure they are locally owned and that they guarantee their craftsmanship for life. Also, you want to find a company that's been in business for at least 10 years. You want to work with a company that's going to be there long after the work is done. Snap Construction has handled thousands of claims, and we'll help you through the process.
Don't go with the out-of-town, fly-by-night contractor. Most storm damage goes missed by the untrained eye. Trust Snap Construction for your free storm damage evaluation. For your free storm damage evaluation, call Snap Construction at 612-333-SNAP or visit them online at snapconstruction.com. That's 612-333-SNAP or snapconstruction.com.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode of Native Roots Radio is presented in partnership with the City of Minneapolis, with Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And tonight we are joined by Deputy Commissioner Patrick Hanlon from the Minneapolis Health Department. Welcome back. Let's get right back into it. You had mentioned resilience hubs earlier. Can you tell us more about what those resilient hubs are?
Yeah, so those resilience hubs are really, they're community centers. It's a place where people naturally go and they naturally meet. And the three resilience hubs that we're working with are the Sabathany Community Center, Minneapolis Public Schools Nutrition Center, and that one is actually a corridor that go in North Minneapolis looking at several buildings, and the Minneapolis American Indian Center with all of the renovations that they've done there. And it's really putting additional funding into those properties and additional resources into those properties to make them resilient to the impacts of climate change. So as we get more extreme weather, and whatever, however that shows up, that these community centers are resilient spaces in terms of energy, that they have renewable energy, that they're able to operate, when the power grid goes out or people are having a difficult time having access to resources, that they're a place where people can meet and that there's resources available to them. And then in times of non-emergency, that they're acting as those community centers and they're really enhanced. And so we're putting investments. We work with Xcel Energy, with CenterPoint is a partner in that work. Xcel is the main partner in that work. And then we're also putting additional incentives into those projects for things like solar, renewable energy, for energy efficiency. We do workforce training. I talked a little bit about getting people into these green careers. We do green career training at these centers. It's enhancing what the community has already decided is centers of resource.
So if we had like a major tornado on the south side, and folks would be able to meet up there,
exactly,
be able to charge phones, get access to other kind of resources, foods.
Yes. Yeah. And even during COVID, you saw some of this, you know, that we had vaccine clinics, that there were places where people were able to, I'm speaking in terms of Sabathini, American Indian Center as well. But there are places where people naturally go to meet and come together.
Thank you. Another focus you mentioned was the trees. And I actually made a note about that. Can you tell us more about what the city is doing for growing trees in our city?
Yes. Yeah. So we've had a tree program since 2006, and we just keep expanding it. Like I said, I don't think we can plant enough trees. The council, Mayor Fry, loves investing in planting more trees. So it's really focused on not only our boulevards and having more trees on our boulevards, but on private property as well. So we planted over 20,000 low-cost trees with this program on private property. We provide free trees to residents living in the green zones. So again, in North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, if you live in a green zone, it's great. These trees are over $150 worth of value, and you're able to get those for free. Folks that are outside the green zones, they're $30, so still not a big cost compared to what it would be to go out and buy one. And we really want, if you have space to plant trees, come get a tree. So we have times in the spring that we do tree giveaways, and then we also have some planting projects where if people have large spaces of land to plant tree, that we'll come out and put together a planting. It's also a great way to bring the community together. And I don't usually have to tell people the benefits of trees from, it's just great to be in a community that has a great tree canopy. There's also a lot of benefits in terms of energy efficiency. If they're near your home, there's reduced temperatures in your community. It's significant. It's between 11 and 19 degrees from a lot of studies in areas that have expansive tree canopy. And like I said, reduces pollution, increases property values. There's just so many reasons to love trees, and we love trees. And so people have an opportunity to plant them. Please, again, you can just Google search Minneapolis Tree Program, and we'll connect you with ways to plant trees in your community.
I think that's one of those things that you really don't think about until you start thinking about becoming a homeowner, about what kind of impact having a good tree canopy is going to have, how it's going to affect your bills. What it comes down to is it's going to affect your money.
Yeah. And how it just impacts your mental health. Like, it's just so good to have a big tree canopy in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I grew up in South Minneapolis, so I remember biking down the streets and having those huge tree canopies.
Over it's beautiful. Streets,
and it's different now, So is there anything else you want to share with us about the climate work that's being done in the city?
Well, we touched on biochar a little bit. That is what we are going to be kicking off we have a biochar production facility that we're establishing, putting together this spring. And again, with the Metawakinen Sioux community, mixing with their compost. And so if anyone has urban farming projects, urban gardening projects, we're looking for community partners where we can go out and get biochar and improve soil, the productivity of the soil between 10 and 30%, depending on what you're planting. You had referenced some of the Four Sisters ways of planting. We've done some work with that, and the corn is better, the beans are bigger.
Yes.
Everything is better when you plant it in the biochar soil. So we're looking for community partners to go out and do that work. It has great benefits for stormwater as well. And then the side benefit of it, I mentioned before, is that it's going to sequester carbon for 1,000 years, over 1,000 years. So we're just really excited to get that program off the ground. It's working in partnership with Bloomberg Philanthropies as well. And the city council and the mayor's office has all been, and the community in general, has just been really supportive of getting this off the ground. And it's a great way to address climate through gardening, which is, there's a lot of energy in both North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis for that.
When that's up and running, will like personal people with their own home gardens on their own lots be able to access that soil?
Yeah, we're trying to figure out a program. We would like to have, I don't know, we think of like victory gardens kind of stuff that they used to do during World War II, but you know, for climate change, that type of approach. So we don't have that laid out yet. So, but you know, having some compost that's available for the average gardener to put in their home and have a way to, you know, have a better garden and help with address climate change as well.
Mm-hmm. And then one more time, can you tell us where people can find out if they live in the green zone?
Yeah, so that one, I would just search Minneapolis Green Zones. I mentioned some of the energy programs that we have, the Minneapolis Green Cost Share program, that we have maps on there where people can type in their address and figure out if they're in a green zones for those programs. But if you just look up Minneapolis Green Zones, you'll be able to see maps.
Perfect. Well, Patrick, I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight and providing this wonderful information. People can find out about getting, if they qualify for the energy rebate costs, they can find out if they qualify for either free trees or reduced fees for trees. And I appreciate your time and have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Wow.
A lot of good info.
Yes, it's amazing. A lot of things I didn't know. And I keep thinking about like my grandparents, my grandma, I think she might live in the green zone and she could benefit from that soil, the rebate program. But I do have a couple of news items I can run off real quick too.
Yeah,
let's do it.
The Lake Street Safety Center is now open. The new Lake Street Safety Center has opened at 2228 East Lake Street, and it's right next to the Metro Light Rail Lake Street Midtown Station. The Safety Center features both city and community-based resources and social services. The community members can walk in 5 days a week, and they can get help from City 311 customer service staff. Those people are, there's a couple of those folks that are housed right in there. And now available, 311 staff can help with non-emergency issues and provide information on city services. They can also connect you with the right support service depending on your needs. Services in the center so far include community navigators and crime prevention specialists. Community navigators will be at the center from 11 a.m. to 1:30 on Tuesdays. Crime prevention specialists are available 3 days a week from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Coming up, other partners will be in the center at varying hours. Soon, those organizations will operate out of the center, and that's going to be Be at School, Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches, the Lake Street Safety Coordinator, and Lead Minneapolis. The center is now open weekdays 9 to 5 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, and 11 a.m. to 7 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And one of the cool things is you're going to be able to host a meeting at the Safety Center if you want. Community members can request to book the conference room to host a meeting. And the room seats about 8 people. There's Wi-Fi, a large screen TV, and HDMI hookups. Groups can bring their own laptops and other equipment that they need. And you can find more information on the Safety Center and the services and the hours by visiting the city's website and just using the search for Community Safety Center.
Wow. Great info. You know, and that's what I love about your show here, Christine, is there's things that come on here like that and your guest that I had no idea, and I thought I knew everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tree thing is like, that's a really great program to have in an inner city, and I'm like curious to see if even St. Paul does something like that, and if they don't, I mean, we got to get on that.
Right.
Or any other
cities, save the air.
Right on, yeah. I always love flying in and seeing all the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Hey, I just want to say we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
This is news from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu.
Justice Department policy is sitting presidents cannot be prosecuted for anything. Special Prosecutor Jack Smith on Monday moved to dismiss both the January 6th and classified documents cases against President-elect Trump.
The judge granted Jack Smith's request to dismiss the January 6th case, but she did so without prejudice, which means theoretically the case could be brought back after Donald Trump is no longer president. But that is highly unlikely to happen.
ABC's Jonathan Carl. Mr. Trump took to his social media to announce that after being inaugurated January 20th, his first order of business will be to impose via executive order tariffs of 25% on all goods imported from China and Mexico. As of today, the right to an abortion up to 24 weeks is in Arizona's constitution, but it will take another court ruling to undo the current 15 weeks ban and more than 40 other regulations. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Packers get some revenge. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After losing in the playoffs three times to the 49ers under Matt LaFleur, the Packers beat them at Lambeau Field by a final score of 38-10 yesterday. Was it revenge? Packers quarterback Jordan Love.
It's huge. I mean, we talked about it all week. I mean, just the fact that they knocked us out, and last time we played them, we lost. So we knew we were going to, it was going to be a four-quarter fight. It feels good to be able to go out there and have a win like this. So, you know, we're going to move past it now. But definitely feels good.
49ers tight end George Kittle.
It felt like they were on the field the entire first and part of the second quarter, so time possession was tough. I feel like it's something that I try to emphasize every single week. Like, hey, what are your goals of victory? Hold on to the ball, run the ball a ton, don't turn the ball over, and I don't think we did any of those three things tonight.
NBA, the Bucks are traveling to Florida. They play the Miami Heat tomorrow night. Tip-off time 6:30. The Bucks beat the Hornets in Milwaukee Saturday night, 125-119. The Bucks are 8-9 and have now won four in a row. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Well, Glickin' Weekend's box office haul turned out to be no match for that of Barbenheimer's, but it was still impressive and helped the holiday box office get off to a great start. As expected, Wicked landed in the top spot with a take of $114 million, more than doubling Gladiator 2's haul of $56 million at the gate. Gladiator 2, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Paul Mescal, Connie Nielsen, Denzel Washington, and Pedro Pascal, was never expected to be the top dog, as it was always Oppenheimer to Wicked's Barbie. Wicked slightly exceeded expectations with its box office haul, whereas Gladiator 2 came in just under its expectations. This is becoming a trend in Hollywood where two films coming out at the same time were not necessarily competing against each other, but help each other create a social media phenomenon. Landing in third place in week two of its release was Red One with $13 million. Rounding out the top five were Bonhoeffer, Pastor Spy Assassin, and the resilient Venom, The Last Dance, which came in fifth place with $4 million. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Clearing tonight, a low of 22, sunny 33 for tomorrow. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, a low of 24. Wednesday, probably the nicest day of the week, partly sunny, highs near 38. 31 with snow for Thanksgiving. For Friday, partly sunny, 24. Currently 33 degrees.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it. All right.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Earl Ingram.
Don from Milwaukee.
I enjoy your show right now at a time like this. You are great therapy for me. I don't know what I'd do without you guys.
We enjoy you as well. That's the importance of Civic Media and this platform. And Sandy and I take this seriously. We're going to continue to do whatever it is we can to make sure that people like you continue to get your voices heard.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will be talking about tariffs and the languishing farm bill with Hans Breitenmoser, and we'll wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda.
and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is presented in partnership with the City of Minneapolis, with Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you. Welcome back. I am Christine McDonald, the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And in this session, we're going to talk about the plan that's being developed to make sure that the city is doing everything it can to make sure programs and services are as accessible to people with disabilities as it is to everyone else. Joining us now to talk about that is Guthrie Byer. Guthrie is a community specialist for people with disabilities in the city's Neighborhood and Community Relations Department. Thank you for joining our show, Guthrie.
Thank you, Christine. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at the city?
Sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm the community specialist for people with disabilities within the Department of Neighborhood and Community Relations at the City of Minneapolis. And I've been in this role for a little over a year now. I use he, him pronouns. And just as a visual description for folks, I am a white middle-aged male, buzzed dark brown hair and a beard, and I'm wearing a dark brown sweater. But I think for a little more context on my role, this is the city's first community specialist for people with disabilities role. And so prior to me being in this role, really the emphasis from the city was on ADA compliance. And so this work was done by the ADA and language access coordinator for many years. Right. But I think kind of through staff and community engagement, it was really understood that this work needed to be full time, and it needed to not just focus on the ADA, which I know we'll talk more about, but it really needed to emphasize more community engagement and involvement in city programs and services by residents with disabilities in the city of Minneapolis. Like you as a community specialist for the city, really that main emphasis of my role is to better connect residents with city programs and events, and for city efforts to be more informed by and decided on by those, in this case, with disabilities. And there is an element of ensuring compliance with the ADA. Mm-hmm. Most basically it's addressing complaints that come in that are based on disabilities, but also ensuring that we communicate effectively in our programs, in our services for individuals with disabilities, ensuring that there's ASL interpretation as necessary, that we are providing materials in alternative formats for those who may be blind or of low vision, for example, but also making sure that city facilities like City Hall and our public service building, that those are physically accessible for people. So that falls within my role as well. And increasingly digitally as well. So all of our digital spaces, our websites and our applications, that those are accessible to people with disabilities. So it's a broad range of work that I do.
Yeah, it is. It's very important work. And it's about time that the city elevated it up to have its own dedicated position that it needs. That's a lot of work. You tell us, a lot of your work involves the American with Disabilities Act, or ADA. Can you tell us what that is specifically?
Yeah, so most basically the ADA, which will be 35 years old next year, is the civil rights law for folks with disabilities. And so it was passed and signed into law in 1990. Really this law means that people with disabilities, be it physical or mental or cognitive, that they have the same rights as those without disabilities in a lot of places. There are some exceptions, but in many places that they have more rights than they had before the ADA. So this mm-hmm. includes jobs and job sites, schools, public transportation, and government programs and services. So some examples, I mentioned mental, physical, or cognitive disabilities, but some examples would be, folks who are deaf or hard of hearing, those who are blind or of low vision, those who have autism, those with physical disabilities who might be in a wheelchair or using a cane or a walker. Again, those disabilities can be very broad ranging. And, you know, it's important to know that the ADA specifically calls out five titles or has five titles. And briefly, Title I focuses on non-discrimination and employment-based settings. A lot of times, this is work that is done by HR departments. Title II is really kind of where I come in, and so I really assume a lot of the Title II responsibilities for the city of Minneapolis. And this refers to state and local governments, including the city of Minneapolis. Title III refers to private agencies, private organizations. So this is going to be restaurants, theaters, hospitals, things of that nature.
Coffee shops.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then Title IV is around telecommunications. So making sure that there's communication devices in place. People may have heard of TTY, which is fairly old now, but that was really important back when the ADA started to make sure that those who were deaf or hard of hearing had the ability to interact, you know, or those with speech disabilities had the ability to effectively communicate with agencies like the city of Minneapolis. And then Title V is kind of a mix of various protections, including those protections for those against retaliation where they are might be filing a lawsuit or complaints against, say, the city or some other public entity.
Yeah. So what does the city's ADA action plan do?
Yeah, and so I think it's important for those listening to know that the city of Minneapolis has an ADA action plan in place, mm-hmm. which is really unique to really any organization that falls under Title II. The ADA action plan was put in place in 2016, and it's being updated right now. And really, it's an expression of the city's commitment to that Title II of the ADA and the accessibility of our programs and services, and increasingly the digital accessibility of our programs and services, as so many more people are getting their information from the city in digital spaces on their website through the 311 app, for instance, things of that nature. Yeah. And that action plan is managed by Neighborhood and Community Relations Department, you know, being the Title II designee under the ADA. And really, it shares the city's legal requirements for compliance within Title II of the ADA. But then it specifically documents things like, you know, who is that Title I coordinator? What is the grievance procedure? If I want to file an ADA complaint, how do I do that? What happens when I do that? And then it also talks about, and I think importantly here for the audience, that the city has a long-serving advisory committee called the Advisory Committee on People with Disabilities. This goes back to 1976, so before the ADA. Yeah, and it's it is, I would say, one of the most important ways for those who really want to have a strong relationship with the city, with city staff, and in influencing programs and services at the city, that they have their voice heard, that they have their opinions expressed, and their expertise validated in those settings. And, you know, in my role, I help to kind of be the liaison to that committee. And that's one of the most, I would say, valuable parts of my job. One part of my job that I really do appreciate the most and get the most enjoyment from. And then it also, you know, the ADA action plan, it also shares kind of like, what is it that we're doing to improve the programs and services that we're offering? It's really meant to be encompassing of all departments at the city. And so we've got departments that are very public facing, like Public Works, for instance. But then we also have departments that may be less public facing. So, you know, folks may not be aware of what Intergovernmental Relations is doing on a daily basis, things of that nature, but it's really important that we're identifying opportunities for the city to be more physically and digitally accessible for residents, but not just residents, for workers and for visitors as well, of Minneapolis. As you know, a public institution, it's really incumbent upon us that we be more accessible and more visible and available to folks in the city. Yeah, and you know, I mentioned that the action plan is being updated again. So it was originally put in place in 2016 after a series of community and public engagement, and that is occurring right now and has been updated with a lot of community and public engagement and staff engagement, and it's something that I think is really going to drive the city to be, I would say, a leader when it comes to accessibility and not just ADA compliance for municipalities like the city of Minneapolis.
I think it's really interesting to find out that that committee has existed since 76. So they've had a commitment to addressing issues and being aware much longer than the ADA Act itself.
Yep. Yeah. And what I think that has meant is that because it's been around for so long, one of the longest advisory committees with the city, that it's been kind of baked into the review process for a lot of staff that, hey, this is a great place to go to for really critical feedback that they're not going to get going to any other committee. And so that's one of my roles that I really value, is making sure that this committee is out there and that staff are taking advantage of this built-in resource that is really invaluable.
If somebody was interested in participating in that committee, are there open seats? How would somebody find out? How would they get appointed to that committee?
Yeah, and I would say for anything that I've mentioned that people are interested in learning more about, and if you live in the city and you're interested in learning more about the advisory committee or wanting to serve on the committee, that you can certainly reach out to me directly. I think I'm going to be the best resource to be able to talk to you about the history of that committee, what it is that that committee has provided feedback on and given their expertise on. So folks can contact me directly. I'm happy to give out my email address and my phone number right now, if that's fine.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's Guthrie.Byard, so it's Guthrie.Byard, B as in Bravo, Y-A-R-D, at Minneapolis.gov. Or you could call or text me at 612-554-3666.
It's MinneapolisMN.gov.
Sorry, MinneapolisMN.gov. Yep, you're correct. So it's Guthrie.Byard.
Sure,
Guthrie.Byard at MinneapolisMN.gov. And then the phone number again is 612-554-3666. And, you know, you had mentioned, you know, when to apply. And so there'll be the opportunity to apply again to be on the committee next spring, around March. And so there'll be more information shared out. But I think the best way to just stay in the know about it is just to contact me directly. And I'm happy to talk to you about it.
Great. March 2025.
Yep.
Right on. Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Let Next Chapter Booksellers help you with your holiday shopping. Next Chapter Booksellers has the perfect gift ideas. Books make for easy, thoughtful gifts that are a breeze to wrap and ship. And if you're not sure what book to get, the friendly staff at Next Chapter Booksellers are great at recommendations for any age and taste. Explore their wide selection of puzzles and games for interactive family fun. And if you're still stumped, then try a Next Chapter Booksellers gift card. That's Next Chapter Booksellers in St. Paul, your destination for easy-to-give gifts.
It's the time of the year where we begin to see the snow fly. If your vehicle needs to get ready for the winter driving ahead, take it in for service at Rudy Luther Toyota. Rudy Luther Toyota's service department is top-notch, no matter if you're looking for routine maintenance or bigger service. They're committed to providing you the care and expert service their loyal customers have come to trust. You can schedule an appointment at RudyLutherToyota.com and make sure to check out their website for the latest service specials. To schedule your service, head to RudyLutherToyota.com. That's RudyLutherToyota.com.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is presented in partnership with the City of Minneapolis, with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And joining us tonight on our second segment is Guthrie Byard. And Guthrie is a community specialist for people with disabilities in the city's Neighborhood and Community Relations Department. And before we went to break, we were talking about the city's ADA action plan. And Guthrie, can you tell us how did the city involve the community in updating the ADA action plan?
Yeah, so the city started off earlier this year, and we had surveyed and engaged both staff and community, both virtually and in person. So this is really through the spring and the summer. It was about a 6-month process. I personally met with every director of each city department, and went to as many staff meetings as possible, and met with several community agencies, including the Native American Community Clinic. And then outside of the U.S., I think it was really important to learn more about how the ADA is applied to and understood in legal settings. And so I met with staff from the Native American Disability Law Center, which is based in Southwest United States, to get feedback that I think the city really hasn't gotten before, specific to people with disabilities. So not just broadly, but to specific communities. And I mentioned we had surveyed staff and community and got a good amount of feedback. So we collected over 320 community responses to the survey, and over 250 from city staff. And really, kind of the feedback that we got was not surprising for me, in that the city really does need to do a better job of expressing its commitment, not just to the ADA, but bringing in different cultural communities and those with disabilities within those communities that my role specifically isn't known about as well. And that really, when it does come to ADA compliance, it feels like the city is a bit slow in making sure that all its programs and services are felt to be as accessible as they can be, both physically and digitally. And that there was some confusion about, well, where does the city's role end and other jurisdictions begin. So think like the Metro Transit and our public transportation system, Hennepin County, and that relationship between the city and the county. So those are that was really important feedback to get when I think about how to really uniformly support the ADA and accessibility across Minneapolis and the services that are within Minneapolis. And I mentioned because of all of that, it has led to a draft update to the ADA action plan, and that was just completed and will soon be kind of shopped around to departments and department leadership and staff for their input. I think it's really important to know that, you know, there are recommendations and requirements across each city department. And, you know, the city of Minneapolis is very broad. And so I want to make sure that this work is signed off on and agreed to along with the timeline for completing this work that then will go to the public for further public input coming up here. So one thing I want to mention is that for anybody who's interested in learning more about the engagement that was done, they can go to www.minneapolismn.gov/ADA-plan, where then you can read a review of all that work, a summary of all that work. So, you know, there's a lot more that was done than what I've shared right now. So that's a great place to start in addition to reaching out to me directly.
Thank you. And how specifically does the ADA define a disability?
Yeah, and I think in the context of the ADA, really the word disability is a legal term rather than a medical one. And so because it has a legal definition, the ADA's definition of it is different than how disability is defined maybe under some other laws, such as for Social Security disability-related benefits. So the ADA essentially defines a person with a disability as somebody who has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activity. So, you know, when you think about impairment, what does that mean? So this can, again, include people who have, say, autism, who are blind or of low vision, or who may be deaf or hard of hearing. You know, it also includes individuals who do not have a disability but are regarded as having a disability. So it makes it unlawful to discriminate against a person based on that person's association with somebody with a disability, which I think is important to mention as well. And so, you know, when you think too about major life activities, these are things like being able to bathe yourself, being able to dress yourself and to feed yourself, those kinds of things.
And that's what you mean by being regarded as having a disability? Can you go into that just a little bit?
Yeah, so it could be somebody who has maybe a history of a disability, may not necessarily identify as having a disability right now, but that they're regarded as having a disability that's on record, that's on file, that it's unlawful to discriminate against somebody based on that experience or status at that time. So it could occur during like in a prospective employment situation. So somebody is applying for a job and has stated that they had such record of a disability that they can't be discriminated based on that previous disability that they may have had.
Okay. And you said the ADA covers jobs. Does that mean that employers need to make accommodations for workers with disabilities?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of misconception around this. And that, so employers with 15 or more employees are required to provide what's called reasonable accommodations to employees with disabilities who have requested an accommodation. So this could be an accommodation of a workplace setting. So requesting hybrid or virtual workplace settings versus in-person. Job tests that may not kind of alter the fundamental nature of the work. And so that fundamental work is still being done, but there's an out request for that to be accommodated in some sort of way. So somebody may ask for speech-to-text software or a larger monitor or something of that sort, or could come into play during the application or hiring process. Somebody may ask for an ASL interpreter during the interview process. And now, what I think is important to know is that employer isn't required to make an accommodation always if it imposes what's called an undue hardship. And that's why it's called a reasonable accommodation. It has to be reasonable. And so an undue hardship is essentially defined as an action requiring significant difficulty or expense, kind of in light of a number of other factors. So it could be the nature and the cost of the accommodation, related to the size of that organization, if it's small organization, or the structure of the employer's operation, that kind of thing. And it's really kind of determined on a case-by-case basis. But really, that due diligence is needed by that organization to come back and say, hey, no, it's not an accommodation that we can feel. They can't just flat out say no.
So how can people file a complaint? I mean, if they need to.
Yeah, so through the city of Minneapolis, if you were...
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Al Petrelli, Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller joins the show, and filmmaker Emmett Lavorty. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues? Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.